This is Gemma Redgrave, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
I'm David S. Dawson from The Intellectual Podcast, a show that spotlights creatives from all walks of life. Part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other incredibly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Dialed into Gallifrey Public Radio. We're a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us for weekly discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and well beyond. Your hosts are Jay Witten.
I choose Death by Scotland.
Keir Hansen.
Arun, Arun, Arun.
And Haley Malley.
Darth Vader, he's a villain, right?
We travel through classic and new Who, explore the extended Whovian universe, and play a few games from time to time if we're left unsupervised. Oh, and a word on spoilers, we do discuss recent news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but don't worry. If we look too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning.
Welcome to episode 348 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we enjoy a nice, leisurely time watching a... Wait, what was that? Did you hear that?
Hear what?
Just a fox or something.
Right. Right. Sure. Yeah. Totally fine. I'm Jay.
I'm Keir.
And I'm Haley. And this week, we learn why we've been focusing so much time in downtown Cardiff, and honestly, we ought to stay there. One trip to countryside and facing alien invasion seems pretty mundane by comparison.
Okay. We probably tipped our hand a number of times leading up to this week, but I think for good reason. So let's kind of go around.
I didn't, because I didn't remember this story at all.
Really? I don't think you remember any of season one whatsoever.
I don't really. I kind of remember the last episode, I think. And that's about it. And I only remember like one thing, and I don't remember how we get to it.
Well, good. Okay. Then that actually serves to your advantage this week, because then this little creep fest is, according to your addled memory, new to you. So what was your impression of countryside?
I mean, people are the scariest monsters. We already knew that.
Always tend to be. Yeah. And Jay, how well did you remember the story before coming back to it?
I remembered broad strokes. I remembered the main points of the story. I remembered things like that. There were some of the minor details that I forgot, some things I had blocked from my memory, but yeah.
Okay. Well, the obvious premise, I mean, we're taking the spoiler wrapper off of this one because y'all know we're doing a rewatch, so you're going to get discussion of at least this episode. We won't allude to episodes to follow. Doesn't matter because Haley doesn't remember them anyway, but...
Couldn't spoil you if I wanted to.
You could pay me money and I'd still goof it up. The premise of the, as Haley just said, the humans being the greatest of monsters rings absolutely true on this. So there's a lot of things that you can take away from this episode that are big jumps forward, I would say, in what Torchwood has been handing us for the last half a dozen episodes. But there are some kind of specifics in here. And the thing that keeps coming to the forefront with me is that this is another Chibnall-written episode.
Yep.
So this was a clear indication of the quality of some of the work on a storyline that he could put forward as far as really driving a very particular point home. That point here being, here be grossed out and terrified and disgusted all at the same time. But he did a really good job of it. So,
yeah, I think this is a greater precursor for Broadchurch than it is of his work on Doctor Who. But
true, just yeah, me. Specifically in terms of reactions from the team as the realization of what's really going on starts to hit each of them. But That leads me to something I wanted to ask you guys about. There's a couple things that happen within our Torchwood team in this story that in some instances are related to the primary plot line, and some are sort of happening on the periphery. But one of them has to do with Yanto and the fact that before things really go pear-shaped for him in terms of his moral peril, there's still a lot going on in his head that he's been carrying since Cyberwoman. And we've seen it kind of, you know, just under the surface in the last couple stories, but it's really starting to boil over here. And I wanted to get your take on how we feel that's advancing the character, how Gareth David Lloyd is portraying it, what it's doing for Yanto as far as audience appreciation. What's your kind of take on his arc so far?
I think he's probably got some of the most growth out of anyone so far, or at least consistent character development, because they even like allude to it when, you know, when he says it and Gwen kind of like, she's like, oh, I'm sorry. And he's like, you forgot, didn't you? It's just, it gets swept under the rug because there's so much else going on and it's just Yanto. He brings the coffee and whatnot. And
yeah.
So yeah, it just, the fact that they kind of like, you know, he's still dealing with this and the fact that everybody else just forgot and he like rubs it in their face almost.
Yeah.
Well, this is the first time we're really seeing him be a part of the team, like out True. In the field, working with everybody. And yeah. So they don't think of him as a part of the team. Like, he's the office receptionist, you know? He's not one of them. And it's unfortunate that they have to refer back to such a weak episode, I think, because I really think if Cyberwoman was better, then when we hit back, you know, story beats to that, it would work better.
Agreed. Mm. Yeah, I did catch the extra little acidic nature when Jack goes to ask, I believe he asks Tosh to check on a tracker for the Land Rover, and Yanto says, I've already taken care of it, but he says it with such this bite, like you didn't think I was capable of covering these things. You honestly, to this point, none of you really realize how much of the legwork I'm doing for all you yabos.
Yeah.
So I appreciate what it's serving as the catalyst for, but I agree with you, Haley. It's coming off of a very weak stance. Anything else would have proven a little better. If he had just come in one day and been really out of sorts because his grand just passed or something like that, and no one really seemed to care that day because they weren't, you know, they're all wrapped up in their own heads.
Even if we had just learned that his girlfriend died in the attack on Torchwood 3, and there wasn't the whole Cyberwoman plot, I think it would work better.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
In fact, new headcanon. That's what happened.
Yeah, there you go. another thing that's happening within the team is this. It's kind of unavoidable, as much as we want to ignore that it's actually happening, is this relationship between Owen and Gwen.
No.
You can't. Because, and here's the thing, and this is why I wanted to ask you guys about it, is because, to me, as fondly as I like to look back on this show, even how, you know, the rose-colored rewatch glasses kick in and those things, and I forget about some of the, you know, the clunkiness of the earliest episodes, this relationship to me, as they are trying to depict it as something that they are brought together because of the harrowing nature of their work and no one else can really understand what they go through except each other, and that, whatever it is they're trying to do to drive this, it doesn't sit right with me. It still feels force-fed.
It's because Owen has been set up as such a creep.
Yeah.
That's the problem with it. Like, if Owen were set up as, like, just, you know, another guy at the office, I think it would work better. But, and it, part of it is that, you know, we live in a different time now than even 15 years ago it was. But,
yeah.
Still, he's just such a creep that, you know, when we go, like, she has a good reason to be stepping out at this point, because all we've really seen of Reese is that he's kind of a putz, and she's got this life that she can't share with anybody, so you understand where her cheating would come from. It's just, why does it have to be Owen? Let it be Yanto.
It could be Yanto, or it would be, she had obvious chemistry at some point with Jack, you know, during the whole, I'm going to take down to the driving range, or the shooting range. Driving range? Yeah, they're going to play golf. Going to the shooting range, and that could have been, you know, the spin for something. But yeah, he's such an undesirable character, or at least, you know, has yet to really show us anything other than the fact that he's always there at the right time. He's an opportunist, I guess.
Well, and we've talked before about his character. Like, we understand what they were doing. They were setting him up as the rogue, and then you see, like, oh, he's actually got the heart of gold. You see the redeeming qualities of him. And I think we came to the conclusion that they just pushed the creep part too far to then take the road that they chose to take.
Mm. Yeah, and couldn't walk back from that. And now anytime he starts to show this kind of edginess, like when they're, you know, slamming each other up against a tree trunk and threatening each other halfway or whatever it was they were doing in that whole sequence, you just see him in the worst possible light because you know what he has been capable of.
He's just so predatory.
Ugh. Ugh. Speaking of predators, everybody else in the program.
Yeah.
Except for poor Kieran, the kid who accidentally shoots Gwen, which I will say, the graphic nature of this episode has stepped up considerably. There's quite a bit as far as the mature content in this one that have stepped up with, you know, with the exception of nudity. But as far as the violence, the gore, the graphic nature of medical procedures, the language,
mm-hmm.
I mean, everything is starting to ramp up quite a bit. And you got to wonder if they're going to try to maintain that or if they're just doing this to say, no, guys, this really is Doctor Who After Dark.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you feel that it was an overt effort or it's something that we've been building up to and now they just naturally at the midpoint in the season have to make the stakes higher?
I think they've been pretty overt this whole season of, you know, this is not your granddad's Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't feel like it was, I felt like it fit the tone of what was going on here. Like, I never once watched any part of this and thought they just went a little too far with that. Like, even Gwen getting shot, you know, it was kind of like it fit the,
sure.
The weird prosthetic, where like, that looked a little wonky, but that was more technical than anything.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I mean, the even the, you know, the foot in the fridge was just, while that was a bit far, was like, oh, that just serves to like amplify the creep factor. So,
right. I'm glad they didn't go the route of actually showing any of the last, all the victims that were still, you know, hanging by the meat hooks were bagged.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thankfully. And not had not been, what were they saying? Bleed them like veal?
Lead. yeah, we didn't see that process.
Didn't need to, thank you.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, and I guess when you're talking about all the things that sort of felt natural, Gwen in particular, I think Eve Miles did an amazing job in this particular story. Mm-hmm. I was very pleased with what Gareth David Lloyd did with Yanto as far as starting to make him a little bit more of a realistic character. His reactions were tempered a bit and it wasn't quite so Cyberwoman. No! But yeah, I mean, Gwen was, as far as just needing to wrap her head around everything, from the time when the mystery starts to wanting to find out the explanation why afterwards was...
I think that's like the best scene in the episode where she's trying to get the explanation of why.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that we never get a really sufficient...
It's not because of an alien thing. They don't need to do this for any biological reason. These are just people doing a terrible thing because some people do terrible things and having to cope with that on top of all the other madness that she has to deal with every day.
Mm-hmm. The thing that really kind of puzzles me is if you allow yourself to continue to think about it for a while, is that it's not just, you know, an individual or a family. Like there was the really wonky X-Files episode that followed a similar premise, and it was equally creepy because anything you're dealing with, you know, a rogue band of cannibals out in the middle of nowhere, that's got creep factor. But this is an entire village and a concerted effort that's been going on for who knows how long. Why so many people? You gotta wonder what Chibnall was thinking when he originally started putting the story together. Did he have any sort of explanation in the back of his mind that he just was using as his, you know, as his literary, starting blocks, but just never shared it with the audience? Because that's twisted.
Yeah. I mean, but I love the explanation that we get at the end when, you know, when Gwen is grilling the guy and he's like, yeah, I'll tell you, but I need to whisper it. And he just tells her, it's like, it makes me happy. And it's just the look on her face sums it up so well. It's like, it's just, she was wanting something that would make it make sense.
Yeah.
And that it all just shattered in that moment of like the it's just a horrible, horrible thing.
Yeah,
there is no explanation.
The thing about I guess it's something about Owen Teal's delivery as Evan. He's another one of those poor guys that always gets cast as the jerk character, either the straight up villain or the hard nose who's never going to be trusted because he's only out to serve himself, and you know, and Scruffy only looks out for Scruffy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because the only other real major role that I remember him from was Game of Thrones, where he played an equally jerktastic character. Wasn't cannibalist or anything of that sort, but was just a straight up bastard through the entire thing.
Was he Thorne?
Yeah.
Yep.
Who kept betraying Jon Snow over and over. Finally got his comeuppance, but only after costing everybody tons of lives. But yeah, he's got a face for it, you know. You see that smirk or that grin, you're like, no, someone's got to kill him. No, it's unfortunate. I'm sure your family loves you.
That's a marketable skill for the actor's resume. I've got a really killable face.
Yeah, I've got a face that people want to put a boot in. So there you go, cast me. We've been up to this point trying to, you know, at times force ourselves to find some of the positives in these episodes. But I think this one hands over. I'm not saying positive as in yay, I'm glad they happened. but positives insofar as something that makes for good television, I guess. So what would you say are the standout positives from the sixth episode of Torchwood?
Yeah, I seriously think just the dark tone of it felt consistent throughout. It felt like this is a solid story. Like one thing I noticed was the lighting is how they managed to keep it dark, but you were still able to see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to watch this on your phone,
Game of Thrones,
if you're trying to watch this on your phone out where it's like all bright and stuff like that, you might have a hard time. But I mean, sitting in the living room with it on the TV, I had no problem discerning what was going on. And then the fact that most of the lighting came from the flashlights they were carrying just helped to really sell that. Mm-hmm. And I love that aspect of it.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. And well, I don't think they were really cognizant of smartphone viewing screens in 2006, but right. We'll find solutions for that.
I also like that we're finally seeing Yanto integrated into the group more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did they ever give an overt explanation as to why he was coming along with the team, or other than just the fact that they needed the extra manpower for this particular mystery?
Well, maybe it's because they were going to be out of the office for an extended period of time. Like they wanted somebody to fetch the coffee in the field.
Right, yeah. Using Jack's 50-year-old camping gear. The tent stakes, they're like...
I know, it's like they clearly have like some sort of ridiculous Black Ops budget. He couldn't go out, you know, to the camping store and buy a new tent for everybody.
Well, the humans are the only species in the universe that actually
camp. They stayed up really well until you drive a Jeep over them. But, you know.
Yeah, but you know they all smelled like mold and dead raccoon.
But they were all sitting on like apple crates and stuff like that too. I'm like, where did all this gear come from? You can't fold this stuff up.
World War II surplus.
Yeah, it doesn't fold up like IKEA. I mean, it's not. You can't flat pack this stuff to put in the back of the Land Rover. So there must have been a follow car.
They just brought the one vehicle, and there were five people in it.
Yes.
Right.
And it wasn't even the big crazy one they use in the city.
Also, who the heck has a food truck parked randomly on some highway way out in the middle of nowhere? Like, they're probably the first people that have ever bought food from them.
Well, you know, you have to stay outside the city limits when you're selling hepatitis burgers. There's a certain radius around metro areas that you have to maintain.
Of the jurisdiction of the health department.
I agree. I'm in international waters.
I like the fact that Yanto came along with the team, but I also like the fact that when things started to go sideways, he just straight up panicked. He didn't know how to handle it, and he's grilling Tosh of like, yo, how do you deal with this? What's going on? And like constantly looking to her for leadership because she's dealt with it before, and it's like you can tell this is his first time really out in the field.
Yeah.
This is the first time he's dealt with anything like that. I mean, obviously the first time any of them dealt with something like this, but mm-hmm. It really did kind of sell the character as a, you know, he's part of the team, but not really part of the team.
Yeah. Yeah. He still has some seasoning to do. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, seasoning, meat. Oh.
Gosh. You go sit in the corner and think about what you just did.
I don't want to. The more I think about it, but all right. So definitely one that I would say is a positive addition to the season thus far.
Yeah,
as far, very much as far as quality of programming.
I would go so far as to say that of the ones we've gotten, this is it leaps and bounds the best one.
Okay,
so far.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the first episode is pretty good.
Yeah, but no, the first episode is a distant second, though.
This is much better than what we've seen for the last few weeks. Well,
for storytelling. For storytelling, yeah. I think this is better. The first episode has its quality simply because you're sort of in the glow of the world building at that point. But yeah, that being established, this is a far better told story and conveyed, I think, better performed. Mm-hmm. In fact, I dare say that one of the weak points in this episode is probably Barrowman.
Yeah, his whole Action Jack sequence at the end kind of really pulled me out of it.
Yeah,
it really did.
Look at some of the particular reactions to some of the scenes. Obviously the kneecapping scene being what it is and all, but there are things around that where everybody's sort of reacting to what's going on with the villagers and such. And his seemed to be the most cartoonish, I guess, in a way. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was the sequence that scenes were shot, and it wasn't, you know, it was just a matter of, you know, we had to do all our night scenes first, and so that was all the dramatic stuff before we had really established or whatever the case may have been. But it just seemed like everybody else was really keyed in to being present in the scene, and he just at times would just sort of come in with a "oh no" kind of a reaction, and it just didn't, it wasn't on the same level as everybody else.
At times it seems like he was almost playing the "I know more than everybody else does about what's happening right now," but he doesn't.
He clearly didn't in this case. I'm in charge of whatever the heck's going on here. Yeah. Right. Well, we will see. And we're left with, obviously, this very strange sort of character cliffhanger about the Owen having this glass-walled, like, penthouse corner apartment thing. Where they've been playing doctor for a bit. I am a doctor.
Oh, no, I thought that was the first time.
Well, yes. No, but I'm saying that we've now established by the close of the story that they have taken things to the next level. And poor Reese is home with a bag of prawn crisps and a semi-warm beer.
It happens.
We'll get back to Reese. Poor Reese. I'm Team Reese.
All right, we ready to get into the news?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
New York Comic Con coming up in about a month. Yeah, so it's mid-October. We're recording right now in mid-September. So there's not going to be, as we discussed, there is not going to be a whole lot of presence, although there is some conversation in the works that maybe there's going to be a surprise addition to some of the panels or something. It may not be anything super, super major, but there will be at least maybe some presence. One group that will have presence there is the team from Titan. We'll have, obviously, their comic and collectibles displays, and they have said that they will have some exclusive vinyl figures to add to the NYCC marketing blitz. So if you want very specific 3-inch vinyl of Jodie's 13th Doctor in exactly this coat, or maybe not wearing this coat but holding this object but maybe not holding this object, you will have those options. I'll be there for at least the Thursday and probably the Friday as well. So maybe I'll be there on one of the first days, I'll grab them while they're still available.
Right. Just,
you know, completionist.
I like the little chibi looking one in the story, but the one with the realistic head, it looks disturbing.
I'm not a huge fan.
Uncanny Divide.
Yeah.
Their expressions are a little, but again, you gotta have them, you know, to have the set.
I think I'm okay with not having the
that
set
one's
in this one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'll hang on to it for a while. New inbox. If anybody misses
put it in
one,
the kids' room to scare them.
a little bit of a creatively designed backlighting and such. Okay. Something that definitely I'm glad that the news cycles are picking up, not only, you know, within the Whovian scope, but also there's, you know, major news outlets are starting to echo the story now as well. Mm-hmm. And that has to do with Christopher Eccleston's discussions. He's been doing a lot of press junkets with his upcoming memoir book. and which I guess is due out in 3 or 4 days from the date we're recording here. So pre-order that one, please, because everything we've been hearing about it has been exceptional. But he's being once again at another point in his life, he's shared a lot of information about obviously his dealing with his I believe his father's memory loss, suffering Alzheimer's, one of the reasons why he got involved with doing the entire A Word series. But he's now discussing body image and eating disorder issues that he was dealing with for a long time.
Yeah,
I guess this spans
including the time that he spent on the show.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he talks about that, how like even during that he's, you know, he's like, oh yeah, people tell me they love the way I looked at that point, but you know, I was very ill at that point.
And it continued to descend, mm-hmm. you know, specifically, you know, anorexic tendencies, and it led to a very depressive cycle that 10 years later, he was still trying to deal with himself. And got to the point where he realized that he was, you know, in an extremely dark spiral, starting to carry suicidal thoughts, and said, "That's it." And then, you know, look up the first available clinic that may be able to assist. Place a call, get in a car, you know, or grab a bag, and just go. Because at that point, he realized that he was beyond something that he could control himself.
Yeah.
But look at that; it takes 10 years to come to that realization.
I love the fact that he's bringing, like shining a light on the fact that it's, he says he's, you know, there were many times that he wanted to actually bring it up and actually tell people about it, but he felt like it was a dirty secret because he was Northern, because he was a guy, because he's working class, and all these reasons that he felt he couldn't tell anyone because of it. And he's kind of shining a light on that, being like, it's all crap. You know, if I had sought help before this, you know, if I hadn't given into those excuses, kind of thing. So it's, I like that. That's one of the things that he's highlighting.
There's anyone who's ever dealt with this, either personally or within their family and circle of loved ones, knows that there are as many reasons to dismiss it or put it aside, or to try and personalize it and say, well, it's just me. This. Yeah, you know, it's something I have to deal with. It's my issue. It's something I have to correct, which mm-hmm. is one of the reasons why it never gets, or so seldom gets the proper care and attention that it needs. So if it takes instances like this of a star of this magnitude coming forward and saying, no, it doesn't matter. We're all susceptible to this. We can all fall prey to this. Every one of those celebrity or high profile individuals who comes forward and shares these things, and the more frank they are about it, that's going to help hundreds of people who idolize them and follow what they have to say, you know, with a fervor, and hopefully see something within themselves that they recognize can get the care and attention and conversation that it needs as well. So, please read the article. Follow him on Instagram. He shares a lot of things, both the silly and the serious. And get his memoirs coming out, because I think that's going to be a really enlightening reading experience as well.
Yeah, I've got to say, he's probably one of my favorite people I follow on Instagram. Just
yeah,
because it is fun. Like, he does some fun goofy stuff. He does some serious stuff, and other times it's just, he's like, hey, look, I'm a photographer now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I mean, he's actually pretty good sometimes.
He is.
Sometimes not so much, but yeah, it's.
I gotta wonder
well
what kind
worth
of
following.
What phone he's using. He gets some good distance shots. Let's see. Obviously, so
the
not
last
gonna be
bit
the
that
new,
we've. The iPhone the last 11. News article that we've got is Colin Baker is. I'm really warming up to this guy. The more we hear from him, the more I'm like, okay, he's not as brash as he used to be, at least. But he's come out and said that, you know, he basically apologized for being so selfish and not filming his regeneration scene. Huh. Because he said, you know, I forgot about the fans.
It's true. Well, I mean, look at it. If you get the notification that it was not something, I mean, he was asked to leave, mm-hmm. right? The role yeah. was taken from him. So bent nose right there. And if yeah. this happens in November and then they say, by the way, you know, as you're packing up your cardboard box and cleaning out your desk, would you mind coming back 4 or 5 months later
Yeah.
And shooting an extra little sequence just so we can explain how you go. I can understand his decision.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, cause he wrote, you know, he says that he offered to come back and do one more season and then regenerate at the end of it, but never heard back from the BBC. And so he got butt hurt and not unjustifiably so.
Right. Not unjustifiable, but he does have the grace to be able to say to the fans, you know, I consider this, and his terms, brutally selfish.
Yeah.
And that's his choice of words, which you may or may not agree with. Maybe you think that it wasn't exactly so selfish. It was rather justified, but you know, that's based on everybody's personal personality complex. But yeah.
I mean, I think it's easier to say, you know, 40 years later ish, you know, oh, I wish that moment existed, but it would be a lot harder to do at the time.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I guess there's a lot of ways you could have explained it or be able to just say, here, let me frame it for you for what was happening at the moment. And here's where I was mentally. But yeah, he could have just as easily just come out and said, you know what? I was ticked off. They burned me. And I didn't want to have anything to do with it for quite some time. And it was the fans that brought me back so I could do conventions.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So, I mean, I've got to give the guy credit. You know, owning up to it like that and admitting that he was selfish, just all the respect for that.
Mm-hmm.
Got to love it.
Yeah.
All right. So next week, what is this game that you have in store for us here?
Think about the couple of times where we have played variations of the Two Who's and a Lie. Right. When it came to products that had, really bad marketing decisions for various Whovian claptrap. Right. One of the things that I personally enjoyed most about us goofing around with these ideas were all the lies that we came up with. Those were the ones I enjoyed most because it could either be really, really offensive and you're like, I can't believe you even thought to put those two things together. Or it was so clever that, like, I'm surprised no one has jumped on this yet, you know, for reasons X, Y, Z. So right. I thought, what if we tried to race each other to the bottom of the barrel and come up with the worst possible products that you could put a Whovian spun endorsement on, like Nardal Hawking hair care products or, I don't know, Captain Jack Harkness contraceptive devices, you know, that kind of thing.
If Captain Jack says a contraceptive works, I believe him.
Right.
Yeah. Well, we don't know. What was his
rigorous
response?
Product testing?
What was his response to the questionnaire about snogging things? Did he say, did non-human life forms count or something? Like
yes.
Yes.
Sentient clouds. How's that do?
Well, I mean, if we stick to our standard protocol of doing the absolute worst job we possibly can at anything, we're going to come up with some really good products off this, guys.
Mm-hmm. And feel free, if you've got some suggestions, we've been getting a lot of just, you know, various things thrown at us for suggestions for upcoming episodes, upcoming games, upcoming rewatches. Yes, we will in time get to the Sarah Jane Adventures. Yes, we will in time go back and do legitimate rewatches of New Who and the commentaries to go along with them. But there's just, you know, right now they're holding that carrot out there of early 2020.
Just remember, we get like 10 to 12 weeks of new content per year, and there are 52 weeks in a year, and we do podcasts on almost every single one of those weeks. So we will get to everything eventually.
Yes, all things in time. The monkeys are cracking their knuckles and sitting down at their typewriters as we speak.
All right. Well, this has been episode 348 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, yeah, can I get one order of the long pig and some nachos for the table?
And this is Gear saying, put the gun down. Put the gun down or I'll repeat this at least 10 more times.
And this is Haley saying, long pig is my favorite.
We'll see you guys next week.
And we'll see.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to gunnageek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.gunnageek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Public Radio is copyright 2019. And Lee, see you next week.